Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Hello, welcome to the UK Tech Weekly Podcast, the UK's premier audio noise, giving you a hot blast of tech straight into your ears every Friday. The UK Tech Weekly Podcast is an infotainment broadside from the editors of PC Advisor, Techworld, Macworld UK and Computerworld UK. I'm going to stop that now. Can't talk over that. You can find us on Acast, on SoundCloud, on iTunes, and more. Every Friday, we bring you no more than 40 minutes of informed tech chat on the hot tech topics of the past 7 days. Do not forget to subscribe to reviewers and to tell your friends. I am Matt Egan, editorial director of IDG UK, and today I'm delighted to be joined in conversation by Gordon Bennett. It's Neil Bennett, editor of Digital Arts.
Hello, and I've never heard that before.
What could be finer than Christina Mercer, audio editor of TechOne? Christian.
Thank you for that.
And whatever happened to our price records? It's David Price, deputy editor of Macworld UK. Today we're talking about Apple's TV career, retro tech and flying cars. So, let's go. Nokia. Neil Bennett, you are old, and you like old things. But you're not alone in this. What's going on?
Well, Nokia's rumoured to be releasing a new version of the classic 3310 phone at Mobile World Congress in a couple of weeks.
Still going on, just keep going.
This apparently has been bigger news on Twitter than Beyonce having twins. I think it's because...
What?
This phone came out in September 2000, which was kind of like a kinder, simpler time, when the biggest worry was kind of like whether George Bush would be elected. And we were scared he was going to be clearly the worst president ever to be elected in America. So, yeah.
Seems that's like a long time ago.
Yeah, things have changed back then. But, yeah, so this phone that so many of us had back in the early 2000s, 2000, I don't know, whatever you call it.
The noughties.
No, I don't know that.
God. It's going to be rumoured to being re-released, which, you know, is exciting to a lot of people who own one about 15 years ago.
So just for the listener... This is the Nokia phone, right? This is the one that everyone remembers, the kind of classic Nokia shape. Had Snake on it?
The 3310, was it?
The 3310.
As tech journalists, obviously, we want to know about the specs.
Yeah,
so,
let's go.
Let's go for it. It had an 84 by 48 pixel monochrome display.
Can anybody work out the pixel density?
I think that's probably Retina, isn't it? If Apple had released it at the time, they would have said
it. Called it Retina. The eyes cannot see anything clearer than this display.
It weighed 133 grams, which is the same as an iPhone 7, but most of us thought of it basically as a brick. Mm. Its key new features when it came out was that you could write three times as long text messages than you could from previous models. But you had to be careful, because back then we all used to have to pay 10p a text message.
And that's when 10p was 10p, right? I mean, in the year 2000.
They were bigger 10p's as well, weren't they?
They were, yeah. Giant. Yeah. If you swallowed them, you had to go to A&E. Yeah. But it didn't take you as long in A&E. Oof, satire.
And, we were all on pay-as-you-go contracts back then. So, you had to worry about whether you should send that text message or not.
Single-word text messages were not a thing in the early noughties, were they? Because it just felt like such a terrible waste to spend 10p saying yes or no.
And also, there were, like, mums that were just getting used to the idea, so they'd, like, write formal letters.
Hello, it's Mum here.
You're sincerely.
I know it, Joe, because I've got your number in my phone. Stupid mum.
Don't say that.
Maureen's not listening to this.
And you have to rewrite messages to try and get it down from being like three text messages down to two to try and save yourself sort of 10p. Which I suppose is good training for Twitter.
Yeah, and I guess it's kind of the birth of text speak as well, isn't it? You know, great.
I didn't realise very long that it is like a temporary necessity. And now we just write normally, you know, iMessage or whatever we get.
But how fascinating that they're releasing a version of this. I mean, presumably it's not that same phone, is it? I mean, it's a version of it, I guess.
Apparently it's going to be nearly identical. I mean, the only difference would be that it might have to be 3G rather than 2G. But that aside, it could be near identical. In fact, we want it to be near identical because the whole point of that phone was that it was, you know, its battery lasted all week and, you know, you could, you know, take it anywhere. It could get really sort of bashed up and it would still work. I mean, you know, I had one that survived festivals, mosh pits, falling over drunk, you know. It was almost like, you know, the worst that would ever happen. You'd end up with a cracked screen.
Yeah.
In fact, somehow that was a badge of honour. It's like, you know, how battered your Converse trainers are, how battered your phone was kind of like an evidence of a life lived in a kind of rock and roll lifestyle.
Wow.
Just for the listeners at home, I'm showing off my very unbattered Converse trainers.
That's so cute.
Yeah, and of course it wasn't a touchscreen either, so it didn't really matter if the screen was cracked particularly. And also you're not looking at photos particularly or anything like that.
But surely we're misremembering this. I mean, it might have been nice at the time, but use it, it's
Who's going to buy it? I mean, presumably it's not like... How much does it cost?
About 50 quid.
50 quid, so that's not like...
It's not super cheap either, is it? Yeah. You could get probably a...
Well, you can get a feature phone for a tenner.
Yeah. Like, people will pay that, though. Yeah. Just to, like, be arseholes.
It's going to be everywhere. Glastonbury and Lovebox and... You know, it's going to be all over the festivals. But the thing is, if it's that durable, does it matter if you pay 20 quid more than a crappy feature phone or something like that?
But it's only going to be a feature phone.
But yeah, if all you want is a festival phone, though.
But if you walk into Carphone now and spend a tenner, because I've got one in my drawer at my desk, that thing is not going to break, and it's going to make calls and texts basically, which I presume is all the 3310 is going to go. So any interest in this, and there is interest, must be. Nostalgia?
Yeah, it's retro fetishism. I mean, we also, you know, how difficult was it to try and get hold of one of those kind of Nintendo Classic Mini consoles before Christmas?
Oh,
you know,
so I thought retro fetishism was a very different thing. It was like a Wayne Rooney thing.
maybe that's a northern thing, maybe. You know, so that's what you guys from the north think about retro fetishism. We just think it's like, you know, releasing albums on cassettes.
Are you saying that Leeds and Liverpool are the same?
Yeah, basically, they're north of the Watford Gap, so yeah, what's the difference?
They all
really?
Love their grannies up there, don't they?
Well, it's interesting that you bring up cassettes, because I was thinking, like it is the case now that in terms of physical sales of music, vinyl is comfortably the biggest format. Like, CD is nowhere these days, and I guess, you know, an audiophile will tell you that vinyl sounds different.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that vinyl provides a better function. But this phone is going to be in every way worse.
But I suppose my point is that it may well provide a better function. I'm not sure that's possibly the case. I don't know. It's debatable. But I think a certain amount of the thrust behind vinyl is to do with the fact that decks look cool and you get a big old picture on your record. You've got a physical product to hold. Mm. There is an element of retro cool about it, I would say. It's not all technical.
But I think also the thing that we nostalgically look back on the 3310 and love about that phone are the things that are the big flaws with the phones we have now.
Yeah, battery life.
And the fact that they're basically made of, you know, glass.
Yeah.
And,
they
smash at the slightest, you know, you look at them funny and your screen's gone wrong. It's...
Even though it was a bit of a brick, for, you know, that phone in terms of weight, but it would fit in your jeans pocket. I wore jeans in those days. I don't know how it is. But it would, you know, and so there's kind of a portability element as well. You weren't carrying around a computer. It was a useful tool.
Yeah.
But it didn't, like, in the same way as your keys or your wallet kind of thing. It just was part of.
And it was the first.
And you had a laptop, though, didn't you? Whereas now you've got.
I didn't. You know, in the year 2000, I actually had a word processor, but that's a whole different level of retro.
I was nine.
Yeah.
Oh, come on.
Shut up, Christina.
But it was the first phone that you could make look cool, whatever your idea of cool was, because you could pop the case off and put a new, you know, this was new at the time.
Yeah.
You would go down the market and buy, you know,
all those weird
whatever
shops
pop star.
On Streatham High Road that sell trainers and phones. That doesn't happen anymore, does it? Nostalgia.
And what about keys and cobblers?
Yeah, keys and cobblers. What's that all about?
What's that all about? Ha ha!
Yeah. Any other retro things that we can see coming back? Like you say, the games consoles has become a bit of a thing recently, hasn't it? Which taps into the same feelings, I guess, which is
there,
I used
there
to
is
love
a,
this product.
There is a sense with games that they used to be made in a different way, that they used to be made under technical limitations, and so because of those technical limitations, they made them better. They made the gameplay better.
Well, again, music's a good example of that as well, isn't it? You know, like once when you get to the 80s, when infinite tracks became possible, music sounds different. And then again, so in the 90s and subsequently, there was kind of a backlash, which is to make music sound more live and raw as an aesthetic choice, even when you had the option to be less that way. And I suppose from a games perspective, it's similar.
But also back in the day, games were almost, you know, they came from a singular entity. They came from a person.
Yeah.
You had famous games designers. Here, a few, you know, you do still get a few, mainly out of Japan, apparently.
But they're like directors of huge film projects, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're overseeing, but yeah, they're not doing.
Whereas if you look at, and actually another kind of retro fetishism for that 80s thing is that Amazon show, Halt and Catch Fire, you know, kind of Mad Men set in the TV, and the film industry, sorry, the computer industry in the 80s, you know, you've got game designers there who are, you know, people queue up to get their copy of the new game signed at Comdex. You know, you don't really get that so much anymore.
It's not an auteur's medium, is it, I suppose?
But yeah,
interesting.
But I was going to say, actually, if there's one thing they can bring back rather than this phone, maybe it should be the Motorola Razr.
Or the flip phone, the...
The Matrix phone.
The Matrix phone, yeah. Even after the sequels... We're happy with that.
I'd still go and buy one of those rather than the 3310. I don't know. Maybe that was just the phone I loved most.
Flip phones were cool.
I think I'd rather have a current phone. I understand the appeal of buying sort of a generation before the current one, because then it's cheaper and it's still basically just as good and you don't get some iterative upgrades. But this is going to be a quantum leap behind what we're
using. Yeah, it's not going to be the only phone, is it?
So you're still going to have your other phone. Yeah. I've grown dependent on having a few moderately good games and access to email and the rest of it on the go, and this is not going to give me any of that.
But I guess it's broadly similar to a conversation we had a couple of weeks ago about things like the iPod Classic. You can't buy it new from Apple anymore, but there's a big resale market because it does a thing really well for a specific function. And to Neil's point, I guess if you're going somewhere where you don't want to take your $1,000 phone, you might, if you're the sort of hipster arsehole who wears a hat and does these things, you might spend £60 on a feature phone.
Do you remember these phones, Christina?
It was my first phone, but...
When you were nine?
A few years later. So it's still knocking about. It's like, all my friends had it. It was really good.
So to you, retro is things that are just normal to the rest of us.
She probably doesn't even think Duran Duran are modern.
She probably thinks So Solid Crew is classic music. That was why I tried to
pick
one.
That was a really good
one.
Reference.
Like,
yeah, you did
well
there.
What was your first phone, Dave?
I probably bought my first phone after Christina did, because I for a long time I refused to buy one, and then eventually a friend of mine said that we'd play a game of pool, and if he won, I have to buy a mobile phone, and if I won, he'd shut up about it, and he won the game. So
did you not think mobile phones were going to catch on or something?
No, I just thought they were annoying. I didn't like the idea of people being able to ring me up.
Yeah.
So I just didn't get one for ages. But yeah, it would have been like 2007, 2006. It was 2005 when I first joined this company. and I had one then. So it'd be about there, 2005.
I got a Motorola Memphis when I was a student. It was huge. In order to charge it, you had to take the battery out. And my parents bought it for me because I just never rang them, because I had to use a phone box to call my parents. And so it was a mobile phone, but it literally never left my room until it got stolen.
But would you want to go back to the days of, you know, before mobile phones? I remember, like, you know, as a teenager, there'd be phone calls flying around about sort of 5, 6 o'clock on a Friday going, you know, where are we all meeting later?
Well, or actually,
and it's always the same place. I don't know why that...
Well,
that,
yeah, I was going to say, in our case, it was, there was a pub where most people would be at a certain time, and then there was a nightclub where most people would be if they were sufficiently sober and in Bradford in the 90s wearing shoes and a suit jacket. Like Colour Me Bad or something. Yeah, yeah. Or the bouncers would just like decide they didn't like you, particularly when you weren't 18, so they had ultimate power over you. And you had to pair off with... You basically had to, behind the chip van, you would pair off with girls, because they wouldn't let boys in on their own. You had to be...
No way.
Yeah. So it was kind of all very ad hoc. But I mean, like work behaviour's changed a huge amount. But yeah, social behaviour's massively changed, because you had to arrange to meet someone at a certain time. Whereas nowadays, I mean, I'm going for a drink tonight, and I know that we're going to meet in a pub somewhere near Waterloo sometime between 5 and 6. And I don't need
I can
to
get there about
6,
mate. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah,
that's great.
Be good to see you.
Yeah.
Oh, just this. All right, this doesn't go out until Friday. It's fine. None of our fans can come and stalk me. So yeah, it's where do we get? Yeah, first phone, Neil.
And mine was a 5110, which was like two generations before the 3310, and it was just even bigger and even uglier, and had a little stubby aerial.
Stubby aerial. I was just thinking that the Motorola Memphis had that, and it actually broke off. And I remember ringing Motorola to say, "Can I get a replacement part?" And they said, "You don't need to. It doesn't actually do anything."
Whoa!
Amazing times.
Did people actually know about model numbers in those days? Because I don't remember what my first phone was. I just think it was a Nokia.
I think I only remember it because of that, because it broke, and then it got stolen, and that was quite a big deal for my student hall, because, like, from an insurance perspective, it was the most expensive thing I owned. I was worried about my CDs, but they were all safe.
I think you're right. I had to go and look up on Wikipedia what the phone I originally had was by clicking through pictures of Nokia phones until I went, oh, yeah, there was that one. Because, yeah, 3310, 5110, these are not kind of, you know, amazing examples of
branding. That's
as good
an excuse for flicking through pictures of old phones that I can think of. Anyway, let's close off this fascinating discussion by going around the room. Old is the new, or kill the elderly. Neil Bennett.
Well, the second one sounds a little bit like euthanasia to me, so I'll go for old is the new.
David Price.
Euthanasia isn't necessarily a bad thing.
David Price.
Kill the elderly.
Excellent. Christina Mercer.
What was the first one? Old is the new. That's what I'll go for.
Okay. It's all right for you to say that.
Wow. As a young person. We'll take a short break, and then we'll be back to talk about different subjects.
That seemed quite long.
Yeah, it was quite long. It's all right. I'll pull it back with Christina's boring section. Who can deny the joy it brings when you found that special thing? You're flying without wings. Christina Mercer. What's that up in the sky, learning to fly? Tell me how high.
I'm sorry, I just can't get over your eyes were closed while you were singing that. It was intense.
This podcast is basically just so that three people have to sit here and listen to Matt sing.
Pretty much. We're his only audience. So, yeah, in Dubai this week, the transport agency has said that passenger drones will start regular operations from July this year. So that's sort of scary.
So this is essentially like flying cars or, I mean, like solo aeroplanes?
Yeah, essentially. So, apparently it can carry one passenger weighing 220 pounds, which I believe is 15 and a half stone, or a person and...
On the cusp.
I was going to say, and a person and maybe a bag.
It was my bag that was heavy.
And apparently you go in and all there is like a touch screen monitor, and you just select your destination and then that's it. There's no other controls.
That's really scary.
Yeah. So
you seen that episode of Silicon Valley where he goes in a Google self-drive car and it ends up like, recalculating the route, and it takes him to a, like an oil rig.
Oh yeah,
it's really scary.
Yeah,
I mean it's meant to be funny, but I found it terrifying.
You're on edge the whole episode.
I found it terrifying.
Well, so let's try and assuage some of your fears. Is this a real, actual thing, or is it just a press release?
I'm not sure, really. I feel like it could definitely be just a load of rubbish.
But they've given a date for it, right? And they're saying
they said in July, and they said that they've been testing it, but I don't really know what that means, to what extent.
I mean, I read something that said they had actually been flying these things over Dubai.
Well, so, I should have probably read that also.
So that, I mean, that suggests that it is kind of like a live thing. But again, I mean, we've no proof of that. But,
yeah. Well, they said that it can fly at 100 miles an hour, which seems too fast. I don't know why.
Also seems a suspiciously round number.
Yeah. But it
that
only
seems quite low for flying.
Yeah, but it's only a single person drone, isn't it? It's,
oh.
It's not like, I mean, it's not going to be going up to 30,000 feet. And, you know, I think the idea is that it kind of hovers around at building height.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just a way of avoiding traffic, essentially.
So it's essentially a taxi. It's kind of like it's like a real version of Total Recall's Johnny Cabs.
Well, apart from in the sky.
But apparently it can only get about 30 miles on one battery charge. So
where do you want to go that's more than 30 miles?
Especially in Dubai. It's quite a small place, isn't it? Am I thinking of one of the other Emirates?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
Never been to Dubai. Is it the one with the really tall building?
It is, yeah.
Yeah, that one. Nice.
But yeah, I really like the BBC did a report on this, and there's a guy called Dr. Steve Wright, and he...
Steve Wright in the afternoon.
Are you sure he's a doctor?
Well, he said he was when he was cupping.
You also quote Dr. Fox.
Apparently he's like a lecturer and an expert in this stuff, but he said that when they asked him if he'd volunteer for it, they said that I'd have to be taken kicking and screaming. That was his expert
Mr. T.
Yeah, I ain't going on no plane. I ain't going on no drone.
So, all right, guys.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
As would you go on a unmanned single person drone?
No.
It's a very straight answer.
I would, but I wouldn't do it first.
Yeah.
I'd want this to be quite normal and there to be no crashes. Yeah, I think at least at like a 99.9% success rate before you go, yeah, that's okay.
Well, I think there's a couple of interesting things to unpick, one of which we've talked about before, which is the fact that commercial pilots will tell you they don't physically land a plane
more than
sort of once in every 25 to 50 times. And that's to keep their hand in, basically, that the plane itself lands itself pretty safely. Well, more safely than a human, basically.
Yeah.
They take over if there's a problem. But obviously they don't broadcast that fact when you're on the plane. And there is a very reassuring man or woman wearing a nice uniform, speaking with a plummy voice, making you feel comfortable, because we're pre-programmed to feel safest in the hands of a human.
Yeah.
Even though probably it is safe. Well, definitely it's safer for a computer to make that decision. But I suppose the other thing is, this kind of free-flying single-person vehicle is a bit very different from the controlled traffic-controlled skies.
And it's also a much busier environment.
That's what I mean, yeah.
So if you think, you know, it's not that long ago there was an air ambulance that crashed into a crane in South London. Once you're, if you're only a certain distance up, there's a lot more things going on. You know, other people flying recreational drones and birds and, you know, cranes and helicopters and God knows what else flying
superheroes.
Rather than, exactly. I mean, yeah, if one of these things happens to bump into Superman, I think it's probably going to be the drone that comes off worst.
Yeah.
He'd react really quickly, though, and he'd save it.
Depends. Not in Superman 3 when he's been a baddie.
Is that the one where he throws a big S on somebody?
I think so, but I might be wrong.
All I remember that is Richard Pryor.
Very, very strong performance. Don't hear much from him these days. No, completely. It's much more. And I wonder how regulating the environment. I mean, this is coming from the authorities in Dubai, so presumably there is a plan. But, you know, it seems unlikely that anytime soon we're going to have motorways in the sky.
Yeah. They said they obviously got asked about safety concerns, and they said that they were like, well, it's got a feature which will just provide an emergency landing if anything fails.
And
I was like, well,
what about
that? Like, yeah, exactly. That is not, well, that's a really general thing to say.
Is that just called a parachute?
Yeah.
I'm interested in this air ambulance that crashed. Was it after it had picked up a patient? Because if it had, that's like the definition of a bad day, isn't it?
I don't know. I can't remember. It ended in tragedy, though, for I think for the pilot. So
definitely not a subject for humour.
No.
On that bombshell, let's go around the room. Fly me to the moon, or I ain't getting on no plane. Neil Bennett.
I'm definitely not getting on that plane.
Dave I'm getting Rush. On no plane.
Christina Mercer.
I ain't getting on no plane.
All right, we'll give Christina a few seconds to recover herself, and then we'll be back to talk about Apple and its plans to dominate TV. Ha ha. Ha ha. David Price, the revolution will not be televised, or will it?
No, I don't know. I don't know how to answer that. I could talk about Apple television plans if you like. Apple has announced that it's going to make some television of its own, which has been rumoured for a very long time, and unfortunately looks pretty crap because. Because they're rubbish programs. They've released trailers of two programs they're going to do, which is they're going to carry on Carpool Karaoke, which
that's
is James
quite good, isn't it?
Yeah, to be fair, that's an existing program.
But they're stretching it out, right?
They're going to release 16 episodes of like full feature.
James Corden's done well, hasn't he?
Yes,
he's quietly cracked America.
Yeah. He is, by all accounts, a very nice chap as well.
Yeah, like him in the History Boys.
Very good in the History Boys. Yeah. Saw him on stage in the History Boys. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Under the drama degree.
I once met Alan Bennett, and he shook my hand. You got better than that.
I've sat in a restaurant near Alan Bennett. Does that count?
Right. That's not bad. Getting back to the
History Boys, Todd Trumps.
That's the lamest thing I've ever witnessed.
Alan Bennett related celebrity encounters. So they got Carpool Karaoke, and I don't think that really counts because that is that's a program that they've just basically
It's already massively successful.
They've just bought up. But the two original ones are one which is called Vital Signs, which is it's supposed to be semi autobiographical. It's by Dr. Dre, so. We don't know much about that.
It's all doctors.
But the other one, and the one which is sort of embarrassing, is called Planet of the Apps.
Oh, yeah, I saw this.
And the trailer for this is really sort of, it's a bit Alan Partridge, to be honest. You keep thinking it's going to be a parody. It's like Dragon's Den, only for app developers. So there's four people sitting in chairs, just like the dragons. And then the developers come in and they have to make what is clearly an elevator pitch, which I think we used to do, didn't we? We had an IDG news service thing where tech people would have to literally be in a lift and have a minute to describe their product.
It sounds like the sort of thing we would do.
Exactly. But this is exactly like that, except it's on an escalator, which makes it like, really crap. So they've got 60 seconds. There's this really slow-moving escalator that comes into the arena.
Oh, my God.
And they're standing on this super slow-motion escalator describing what their app does. And then the four experts, which we'll come to in a minute, to make it more sort of techie, they appear to have like a Tinder on their tablets, and they sort of swipe left to say no to this.
Right.
And then if they say yes, then eventually they come in and they choose a mentor, which I think is like in, what, The Voice?
Yeah, like The Voice.
I don't watch The Voice, but I think it's like The Voice. And then that person will then mentor them to try and make a success of their app, and they'll go through all the various pitching to venture capitalists or whatever. And eventually, at the end of the program, you can download the app, which is sort of where Apple's thing comes in. It'll be prominently displayed on the App Store. But it all looks, it just looks really embarrassing.
I mean, it does sound lame, but there's a germ of an idea in there, I suppose.
Yeah, well, yeah, there is. But all the app developers out there basically are laughing at it.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
The best we've seen is a couple of them have said, well, yes, this looks ridiculous, but it's not aimed at us. It's aimed at people who are not in the industry. And don't.
So is it aimed at people who have an idea but no means of actually coding the idea? Or?
Well, the entrance,
yeah.
Possibly. But a lot of people are saying that they just refuse to go on it,
yeah.
Because it's just, it's an odd way to do it. And it's really sort of degrading as well. This is a serious subject, and it's being reduced to the level of putting on a little performance.
Yeah, but that's, I mean, that is the same as
The Apprentice.
The Apprentice, yeah. All those.
Well, The Apprentice is a joke as well. You remember The Apprentice started out and it was semi-serious, and the people that were on it were actually quite good, you know, young business people, and there was a genuine job at the end of it. And then it changed halfway through into just, here are some objectionable people that will have arguments, and at the end of it, what happens at the end of it? He now gives you a loan or something?
You get like an investment from him.
So he's not even, you're not even working with him anymore.
Yeah.
So that's ridiculous. Let me tell you the experts then. You've got a guy called Gary Vaynerchuk, who I don't know anything about, but he's the CEO of VaynerMedia. But the other three are Gwyneth Paltrow, Will I Am, and Jessica Alba.
Will I Am just on everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. To be fair, of those three, Will I Am has the best technology credentials, because he's released a lot of extremely bad technology products.
But he's just been announced he's going to be a new market trader on EastEnders, isn't he?
Will I Am?
Yeah, not really, but I was...
Right. See, I don't watch EastEnders. You could have had me going with that. Yeah, no, he released this smartwatch, which was terrible, and headphones, which were terrible, and various other things. So he does actually know a little bit about the technology industry. But the other two, I don't really know what their connection is. But
does it matter? I mean, it sounds like this is like The Modern Apprentice. This is, let's laugh at these flipping idiots.
Yeah.
And I could be about the people pitching or the judges at this point. It's it's just a complete, trying not to swear here.
Christina's already used the word arsehole, so.
Yeah, that's a swear word. Oh. Actually, my mum would say that's a swear word.
Yeah, I was going to say clusterfuck, but, you know, it's apparently that's not allowed.
We're going to have to use the bum juice.
Yeah.
So why is Apple doing this?
Well, they've said that they want to create an entire pop cultural experience, and that happens to include audio and video, which is a bit weird.
So they're trying to get into the content game, basically.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, because they've got Apple Music, and they want to give people more incentive to sign up to that. Because at the moment, obviously, by the name, it just offers music, but it's going to have television as well. So surely at some point, they're going to have to rebrand it. I thought they should call it Apple Play. There you go.
It's a little bit Google Play-like, though, isn't it?
Oh, well, you know, they stole the word App Store for a bit. Anyway, maybe not. But yeah, they want to have a bit of television, so they're creating their own television.
But why aren't they just buying? I mean, I don't know. Like tech companies have a history of...
Well, yes,
you've got Facebook and Google, who are essentially conduits for other people's content pretty successfully.
Yeah.
They don't even try make, or they have had various attempts at making stuff themselves, but ultimately what they are is a marketplace for other people's content. It gets people like Amazon, who actually are starting to make inroads there. Odd, really, because they went from retail to tech company to content company. And then on the flip side, actually BT as well, I suppose, tech company that now make content reasonably successfully, but it's a massive investment to try and win users. It's a loss leader. And then you've got smart content companies like Sky and ESPN, who are creeping ever more into the tech space. But I can't think of a tech company that's successfully kind of transitioned into this. And I don't understand why they would. Apple's got a massive distribution network. So, you know.
But you're not including Netflix in that, then?
Yeah, but...
Because the two big ones that they're clearly trying to emulate are Netflix and Amazon.
Prime. Yeah, but I would say Netflix is a content company that's got a bit of tech. Yeah, completely. It's a very good example. But Apple could buy Netflix.
But also the biggest thing, I think, is that it took such a long time for Apple to move from selling music to streaming it.
Yep.
You know, how long is it going to take that company to actually move from selling DVDs and box sets and, you know, physical media or shows that you can download and own to an all-you-can-eat package
deal? TV producers, people who make TV, have actually been much smarter than the music industry as well. I mean, it's happened later. But if you know, like Richard Osman, who, yes, he's on Pointless, but actually he's senior executive at Endemol, so he's a big player in big TV in the UK, and he was saying the other day that, you know, them and companies like them have been ready for years for TV to go on demand, and they're actually surprised that the current, let's say, streaming essentially, but broadcast schedule is being so robust, and it seems to be that it's a generational thing, but people still like to switch on at 7:30 and watch EastEnders or Coronation Street or whatever. But it's going to happen that TV will become almost exclusively on demand. And the program makers and the kind of financial ecosystem is kind of ready for it.
The only thing that would be left would be live TV.
Yeah.
It'll be football sports, and... Yeah.
Sport and events, essentially. Music and things like that.
And X Factor and stuff like that. Well, do they have like live versions of those shows?
Yeah, so kind of things where people second screen on social around something as it's happening. And then you get the same thing with premieres of new series where people want to second screen around it. But I suppose the point I'm making about Apple is they're pretty late to this. So it seems odd that they would want to, maybe they're not, but they would want to invest in the risk of making stuff that people might not like rather than with more money than basically any other company in the world.
It does seem like a risk, and you know, it may not work.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like it's going to work at this point because the content doesn't sound like it's
going to work. I mean, Amazon, let's not forget, basically bought Love Film and a few other companies to get its back catalogue, and now is consistently buying, like, you know, buying Seinfeld and things like that, which is a low price acquisition that just adds to the whole idea that there's this library of content. Mm. Netflix does. Netflix said the other day? Oh, it's got The People versus O.J. Simpson, which was on TV a couple of years ago, but is, you know, again, it's just adding.
It's a good show, isn't
it? It is a really good show. Yeah. But Apple, it would seem, is going to go a different way.
I don't know what their plans are with TV overall. I'm hoping that what they will do, which is what they used to be good at, is creating an umbrella service.
Yeah.
Because you look at something like music, where exclusivity deals are still comparatively rare. I mean, you had the thing with Prince on Tidal for a little bit, but he's come back to all of the streaming services now.
Much from him these days.
but on TV, there's the annoying situation where, well, for example, I have Netflix and I have Amazon Prime as a result of some bad decisions in my life.
Good decisions, I would say.
Possibly. But whenever I want to watch a program, then there's always that frustrating thing of, well, who's got it? And it's never the people that I'm currently subscribed to. What Apple need to do is to come in and launch a service that may be more expensive than any of the existing ones, but which includes most things. And that's what they would be good at. They want to have a few things of their own.
But timing's everything there, right? Because
because
with iTunes, Sony was essentially being head in the sand about digital music. And so Apple got in and vigorously pursued all the music publishers and got them to allow what seemed like the relatively trivial thing of allowing downloads. They thought that wasn't going to be a big part of their business. TV is much more mature. TV and movies actually are more mature markets now.
Yeah. Well, they're in a position of strength. Music was dying when Apple came along and offered them a lifeline. But TV, they're not going to give it up lightly.
But also, I mean, can Apple convince the likes of Netflix and Amazon to put their own original programming within another service? The whole reason why Amazon and Netflix do these original, you know, do make Stranger Things or... Yeah, the whole reason why Sky is pushing shows like Fortitude at the moment is because they're exclusive to them.
Well, look at the way Sky is structured. The only thing you can only get on Sky is Sky Atlantic, and that's the only place where they put the drama programs that that are. I mean, I dare say they would do the same thing with sport, but they can't because the sports licensing bodies insist that they share them with other broadcasters. But yeah, exactly. Exclusivity is the way that you get people to sign up to your platform, and also, it's not premium. I mean, like Sky is, but it's going down. And what, Netflix is, what, £5 a month? And Amazon, you get it free if you sign up for Prime, which is £80 a year. So that is not expensive.
Yeah. Well, Apple Music is $9.99
right
a month.
And you get the music as well. So it's in effect, it's Spotify Plus if Netflix. They get this TV.
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah, I don't know.
But it is interesting to look at the way things have changed. I was reading the sort of highlights of the original content that's been made by these tech... I don't know, are we calling Netflix a content company then?
No, we'll call it a tech company, why not?
But there's some really good stuff. And I have, as I said, I have both of these, and I don't watch anywhere near as much as I should. But you can divide it into these two groups of stuff which maybe wouldn't get made if it wasn't for these companies, and stuff which would have got ended and they continued it, like Arrested Development and Ripper Street.
Yeah.
Also, stuff that would have ended up on Channel 4. There's a lot of shows, you know.
But with much higher production values.
Yeah. But American shows as well. Yeah. I mean, a lot of the stuff that you see being, you know, they call it Amazon Originals. It's only because it's only available over here. You get some stuff which has been made by AMC. Things,
you know, I mean, it's very, it's early and it's nascent and they're ploughing money into it, but Transparent and things like that would not have been made because the US networks are famously, you know, coy about addressing anything to do with sexuality and things like that.
BoJack Horseman had bad ratings early on. Have any of you watched BoJack Horseman? Very good programme. Got quite bad ratings early on. But they just kept it going because they trusted in their data, which is, you know, which is a key thing of this, and they kept it going. They're much more willing to do risky projects because it's all bundled. So they don't have to get individually high ratings. They don't have to sell adverts against each individual program. So they can, they feel like they can take more risks. But it's, the point is, it's a different set of commercial pressures.
Well, I wonder as well, like, and we know this from our own experience. We used to make magazines and we kind of guessed what people liked.
Yeah.
And then you go online. And what that means now is we do far fewer things than we used to do. We don't do news because we know that people don't come to us for news. Mm. But we really focus in on the things that people actually like. And I suspect that's the same with TV to an extent, is that when you take scheduling out of it and you take, to a large extent, actually promotion and marketing out of it, you find out exactly what it is that people genuinely like.
Yeah. So what you get with... the famous example is House of Cards, where they just looked at their user data and said, people that like David Fincher also like Kevin Spacey and also like the UK version of House of Cards, so let's join those all together. So this is why it's we're in a good place at the moment, where the different sources of content are all thriving. So you've got, you know, you've got the BBC that don't need to worry about ratings, but they do need to worry about satisfying the Daily Mail, and you've got ITV and Channel 4 who need to sell adverts against things, and you've got these guys where it has to satisfy the data, which it, on its own could produce a lot of formulaic stuff where they were not willing to do anything unless it was, oh well, the data backs it up. But at the moment you've got those three different forces, and it means we're getting all sorts of different programs. We're in a very exciting time,
and also there are going to be niches in every country. It's not like they're just trying to, you know, like the BBC or Channel 4 trying to hit one nation of people. They can make, if they make a TV show that's picked up by, you know, 100,000 people in each territory, that may not be the biggest show that's out there, but that's going to be enough people to recoup the amount of money they've put in there.
And because it's subscribers, they can afford to have a lower audience. They don't need to hit millions each time.
Well, what they need to do is get people to subscribe, don't they?
Yeah.
So that's why, and it's a bit of a, it is a bit of a land grab, so they're probably spending more than they will in the longer term, and they won't all survive. That's the interesting thing. But,
I've got Hey You, which is basically Netflix, but only for reality TV.
Oh, come on, Christina.
I like to keep up to date with the R&B scene in Atlanta.
What?
I see, you just
don't understand
it.
What
you
that means.
I think it's some sort of young person's code word.
Anybody watch Sneaky Pete? Sneaky Pete's good.
I haven't started. I mean, it's there. I will watch it at some stage.
It's good. The guy in it, he does all these funny faces. I think he's trying to be like Robert De Niro, who we don't know, who we don't like anymore because he's an anti-vaxxer. But he does all these sort of serious faces and stuff. But other than that, he's a very good actor. Giovanni Ribisi. The program.
You heard it here. Probably not first. Let's quickly go around the room then. Tele Addicts or You've Been Framed? Neil Bennett's.
Definitely Tele Addicts.
David Price.
Tele Addicts.
Christina Mercer.
Yeah, Tele Addicts.
Thank you so much, guys, and thanks for listening to this edition of the UK Tech Weekly Podcast. Do get in touch, let us know your thoughts and opinions. Tweet us at UK Tech Podcast or email editor@idg.co.uk. We will be back next week with more informed and uninformed opinion on the hottest topics in tech. Until then, don't forget to subscribe, report, review us, and tell your friends.
Please report us.
Yeah, report us if you want. That's cool, we've got nothing to hide, apart from some stuff. Until next week... Compadres, say goodbye.
Goodbye.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.